I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. The summer solstice is upon us. Next week marks the official beginning of summer, and today on Midday, Heidi Daniel, the president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library, has some suggestions as to what books you might want to throw in your beach bag or save on your e-reader. We'll hear about what's new at the Pratt as it gears up to celebrate the completion of its three-year, $115 million renovation in the fall, and we'll talk tech. More than 74,000 Baltimore households don't have internet access. The Wash and Learn program of the Pratt brings connectivity to four local laundromats. And J. Wynn Russick reviews the latest offering of the Bros, the Baltimore Rock Opera Society. That's all coming up when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for hanging with us. The official first day of summer is next Friday, and joining me now to help us put our summer reading list together and to update us on the many goings-on at our city's wonderful library, Heidi Daniel is here. She's the president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. It's good to see you, Heidi. Happy summer.
Good to see you, too. Thanks. It's good to be here.
So, listeners, we're going to talk about books that we want to recommend. We're going to talk about all sorts of great stuff happening at the Pratt. If you would like to chime in with the kind of stuff that you're reading these days and you can recommend to everybody, we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, and you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page, so you can ping us there. So first thing I want to ask you about, Heidi, is this very intriguing program that you've launched called Wash and Learn.
Yeah.
The library is involved in connectivity in laundromats. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it's a partnership program that we're doing in conjunction with Libraries Without Borders, the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation, and the Media Democracy Fund. And Libraries Without Borders had brought this to Baltimore, and I happened to be at a meeting that they were presenting it at with the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation. They've done similar programming in other cities, so I was definitely intrigued from the first moment I heard of it. And basically, the idea is we were looking to do some digital equity, some more digital equity programming throughout the city. We were really interested in how do we take our services. We're the number one provider of free internet service for the entire state of Maryland. So how do we take that and further connectivity in the city of Baltimore? You know, we know that it's needed, that there are still a number of households that don't have access to broadband.
74,000 households.
74,000.
That's
yeah,
a lot of folks.
I know, it is. It's a lot of folks. And if you think about how that impairs us, it's easy for people to think that everyone has everything they need on their phone or online. But if you don't have connectivity in the home, you might be relying on a data plan. Data plans are expensive, so you're likely relying on access to Wi-Fi. And that's where we see a lot of people come in. Also, it's hard to do things on mobile devices sometimes, right? I mean, I can't imagine trying to take my GED on my phone. You know, so there's limitations there. Even sometimes filling out forms, if the provider doesn't have a really great mobile site, it can be difficult. So
Sure. We
were thinking this through, and we really thought, you know, having this Wash and Learn initiative be focused on digital equity primarily was the way we wanted to go with the program, different than how it's been done in other cities. So this program places library technology in four laundromats, a combination of iPads and laptops. And then we have librarians that will be going out and doing programming at two of the sites so that they'll be doing all kinds of stuff. So whether it's, you know, job applications, or resumes, or, you know, how to access health databases, how to do certain kinds of research, programs with kids. We have, you know, some iPads with apps specifically for kids on them. So they'll be doing all kinds of programs, and they'll be doing them in little shorter bursts so that you can, you know, learn something in between the spin cycle and the dry cycle.
Yeah, so there's one on Pulaski Highway. There's another right. one on Frederick Avenue. There's one on Erdman mm-hmm. Avenue, and then up on Reisterstown Road.
That's right.
That's terrific. And, you know, the Robert W. Deutsch Foundation, Jane Brown is mm-hmm. Robert Deutsch's daughter.
Right.
Mr. Deutsch just passed away recently, as a matter of fact. And I I've known Jane for a long time. I have great respect for her, and she this digital access, this technology access, has been a cause célèbre of hers for a long time. I know she cares
Definitely.
Deeply about this because it really is. I mean, when we talk about all the inequities, inequities in education, or inequities in the housing market, or inequities in job opportunities, digital inequity is a huge problem. I mean, people really talk about an unlevel playing field. If you don't really have access to a device that you can submit a resume or, fill out a job application, it just puts you way behind the eight ball.
Absolutely. Or even the knowledge of how to do that. First, let me say that Jane has been the champion for this program. I think it's inspiring to see how much she cares about this topic and the city of Baltimore in particular. So it's been great to have that opportunity to partner with the foundation and work with Jane. I think it's almost like we've talked about the digital divide, and there's people at the start line, and there's people running a marathon. And I think now we're at a level where there's professional runners running a marathon, and then people who've never ever even walked a race before involved in this. I mean, if you don't know how to do certain things on the internet, then you are really missing out on a huge piece of what the internet is and what it does for most of society. I think things that we take for granted, I take for granted my ability to do certain kinds of research on the internet. But if you don't know how to do that kind of research, you could be very easily led to false information, for example, or bad information. I know how to assess a website and understand immediately that, this is an out-of-date site, this number isn't going to be correct, or the information on here isn't correct. But there are many, many people who would have no idea how to assess that. If you don't know how to connect with a healthcare provider, Kaiser Permanente, I see their billboard every day. We're here with you all the time. Many insurance agencies are pushing, the connecting with your doctor online.
Yeah, it's almost digital only sometimes.
Right,
Really, in terms of figuring out a healthcare plan and stuff like that. I mean, boy, you've got to go online.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you don't know how to do something really simple like right-click, left-click on the mouse, which many people don't, you're really being left behind even further. So to me, this is becoming, access to the internet is becoming sort of a new civil rights issue, access to this kind of information and access to training. And I think the training piece is where the library can really come in and help. Our staff knows how to work with people every day that have varying levels of skill sets for the internet. We were having a conversation. Someone said, sometimes our customers don't know what a cursor is. So when someone says, place your cursor here, they don't know what a cursor is because they haven't been on computers.
And it's, I think it's an absolutely terrific idea to put it in the laundromat.
Yeah.
Because you got to do the laundry.
You do.
And you're sitting there waiting, and this is a perfect way of using that time to great. And so there's going to be a fair amount of equipment in there, I guess, right?
It's somewhat limited by the space. And, we're kind of still troubleshooting. We launched the program and then discovered that there were some tweaks we needed to make. So it's a learning process for us, too, because from the Pratt's perspective, we've actually have done pop-ups in laundromats in the past where we have had story times or outreach card drives in laundromats, and we found them to be really successful, which was another reason why this was an interesting project for us. And Libraries Without Borders really did a lot of research and trials before their first program on where was the best place to do these kinds of outreaches, and discovered that, at the grocery store, you're kind of running out, your milk is going to spoil, so that's maybe not the best place. But laundromats, as you said, people have time to kind of wait for what's happening. So it was great to have a partner with that experience and to bring it in. So.
And any hope to expand that, to put it in perhaps even other laundromats or different kinds of other places?
Yeah, I think from the Pratt side, the Pratt's perspective, that we would definitely love to expand this, as we learn our experiences in this first sort of pilot program. We'd love to see the expansion of that. And we're definitely interested in taking our services and our programs in general outside of our walls. So we have 22 locations, as you know, throughout the city, but we're really interested in where else can we go? Because a trip to the library might be, for someone, just another thing to fit into their schedule. They might not be able to do it quite as easily, or they just may not have any familiarity with who we are and what we do. A lot of people think that we just have books, and it's great to be out there.
And for a lot of people, transportation is a real issue. It's really
absolutely difficult.
So you already have a mobile van or several of them, right?
Yep.
They go
we have
around.
Three.
And,
mm-hmm.
and they help folks with, job searches and resume writing and application submission and stuff like that. So that's really important because, you know, for sometimes for folks even to get to the laundromat, you know, it's two or three buses. I mean, it's hard. You know?
Right. So. Absolutely. And we understand that, and we don't want to be just another, you know, chore that has to be fit in. We want it to be a really positive experience. So the more that we can be in places where people are already going and help the library fit into their lives, the better it is for all of us.
Yeah. Well, and you'll obviously have to work out all the issues about, you know, securing the equipment and, you know, the relationship with this commercial establishments and all that kind of stuff. Are they involved in it at all?
I mean, so the Libraries Without Borders worked with the Coin Laundry Association and then with the owners of the laundromats, and they are definitely involved and have been, you know, positive advocates for it. So we have been very excited to have them on board with it as well. They worked, Libraries Without Borders and the library worked with the Neighborhood Design Center and OpenWorks to construct the furniture. Libraries Without Borders, you know, worked on the security. We're working on it now more from our side. You know, we've discovered a few things that we want to change. So we have luckily great IT and facility staff who can go in and help with those security issues as well.
That's great.
So I, you know, we're working through the kinks right now, but we think it's going to just be an overall very positive program. And we have an evaluator that we're going to be using to evaluate the success of the program, which will help us determine what we want to do to spread it further.
It's already up in 8 cities in the District of Columbia as well. And, and so I'm glad that that Baltimore is one of them. Let's talk about the Summer Challenge. It starts on the 12th of June. Is that today or yesterday? It was yesterday.
Yesterday.
And goes through the 14th of August. All age groups, not just
all
kids, right?
Yep.
And you sign up online, right? So you get over to the laundromat, you do your laundry, and you,
you
sign,
can sign up
online.
You know? We'll sign you up right there.
And so, and that you hand out fabulous prizes.
We do, yeah. So you can sign up at home in the comfort of your own home. You can sign up in the laundromat, at the bus stop, wherever you are that you're signing up, or in one of our branches. So you can come in. Our staff is happy to help you sign up. We give great prizes. It is all ages, children, teens, adults. You set goals, you hit those goals, and we give prizes. It's not just for reading. Some of the activities that you can participate in happen to be, you know, attending a STEM program at your library or attending, you know, some sort of book talk at the library. So there's a wide variety of things you can do to earn those prizes, and it ties in with all of the free programs we have going on all summer long in all 22 of our branches.
Because the summer slide, we were just talking about this on Tuesday with Sherry Parks, the summer slide's a real thing.
I mean, if
a kid all of a sudden just is not obliged to read as of June 20th and then, you know, doesn't start reading again until the fall, I mean, that's a problem.
Right. So they have most likely at that point slipped at least one grade level in their reading skills. And that's actually fairly common and was one of the reasons that libraries started doing heavier summer programming was to kind of help combat that summer slide. We also recognize that there's issues with, you know, a lot of kids may be going to camps, but a lot of kids can't go to camps or parents, you know, the camps are expensive. So the library likes to step in and help with that by offering a lot of free learning programs for all ages to help combat that summer slide. And also with that sort of, you know, idea that it's free. You don't have to pay for something expensive to get that same benefit of learning.
And you run a lot of programs in all of the branches.
We do, yes.
During the summer, during the day.
Yes.
I mean, so for kids to hang out at the library for part of some of the days of each week is a good idea.
Yeah, we've got activities for kids. We've got activities for adults, for families. And we really hope people will come in and take advantage of them.
So you moved into your office in the Central Library Building about 6 months ago, I guess.
I did.
Things are heating up. I mean, we are the grand, I don't know, do we call it a reopening of the Pratt? It's going to happen on the 14th of September, week after Labor Day or so. But it's almost done, isn't it? This is a big project.
Yeah, we're getting close to substantial completion, which is exciting for us. You know, we've got, you know, a long punch list still to go. There's a lot of little details that have to be managed, you know, with construction project this size.
But the library has stayed open the whole time.
Stayed open through the whole thing. And the great thing is now when you come in, you see a lot of those original details. It looks a lot more like what it will look like when we do the reopening. There are some rooms like the Mikulski room that we haven't completed that aren't open yet. We're still doing work on the children's area. That's sort of the big piece that's left. And that's going to be amazing. So, you know, the fish pond that was there is replumbed and there'll be a mosaic that was done in conjunction with Art with a Heart. So it's going to be beautiful and really special and amazing. We have a huge goal of getting 1 million people through the doors in the first year that we're open. And I really think we'll be able to do that because we're going to have some really high-level events throughout the year for the public, lots of great speakers and authors that we're confirming and getting scheduled now. And we also have this amazing teen center that's three times the size of what our previous teen center was, with a audio recording studio and an editing booth, a maker space. It's going to be really state-of-the-art. And we have our creative arts room, which will have all kinds of art-based programming. It's also a great meeting space. They're really beautiful rooms.
And as you say, and we've talked about this every time you come on, you're redefining what a library is, too.
Absolutely.
It's not just a place you go and check out a book. Yeah.
No, yeah. We have seven job and career classrooms that I think people will be able to get all kinds of services in.
So. $115 million. It's taken 3 years. It's going to be great. As a matter of fact, we just figured out today that midday we will have a live broadcast from the library just a couple of days before the big grand reopening. So that'll be fun in September.
It's exciting.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some books. Heidi Daniel is here. She is the librarian, the CEO and president of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. Join us at 410-662-8780. You can send us an email midday@wipr.org. You can drop us a tweet @midday WIPR. You can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. So before we head to a break, a reminder that we're interested in hearing from folks who are involved in their communities as part of their community associations or groups who are working to improve neighborhoods around our city. Every month or so here on Midday, we talk to folks as part of our Midday in the Neighborhood series. So the next one's coming up a week from Monday, June 24th. I'll be speaking with representatives from Ridgely's Delight, Greenmount West, and Druid Heights. So if you or someone you know is involved with your neighborhood in a significant way, please send us an email so one of our producers can be in touch and schedule your appearance on our show. The address again, midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We're going to take a look behind the headlines with Heather Cagle. She's the congressional reporter for Politico, as well as Justin Fenton of the Baltimore Sun. He's just published an amazing series on the Baltimore City Police Department Gun Trace Task Force in the Sun. So we'll get a look behind those headlines with Justin Fenton of the Sun and, again, Heather Cagle of Politico. Plus, we're going to hear some Indian and jazz fusion music with Rajana Swaminathan and her band Rajas. They'll perform here in Studio A on a midday mini concert. So that's all coming up tomorrow. Hope you can join us. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about books with the president and CEO of the Pratt Library, Heidi Daniel. We'd love to hear what you're reading these days. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to tweet us @midday WIPR, to follow me on Twitter @TomHallWIPR, and you can ping us on the WIPR Facebook page. So Heidi, let's talk first about some fiction. This new novel by Elizabeth Gilbert, she was the Eat, Pray, Love person, right?
Yep.
It's called City of Girls. I've heard a lot of buzz about this one. What do you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like this is the book that's on everyone's summer reading list. You know, in preparation of this, I was looking at what are other people recommending for summer reads, and every single list had City of Girls. So I was like, well, I obviously have to put that on there. It's a great, I think, book for summer, because people have described it as, you know, like a champagne cocktail or a gin fizz. And it does have that sort of glamorous feeling. You know, 19-year-old girl's been from a wealthy family. She's kicked out of Vassar for really partying too much. I mean, you know, and sort of a lackluster academic performance. She says in the very beginning of the book that, you know, she was the second to bottom in her class, and her dad asks, like, well, what did the bottom person do? And then they later found out that they had contracted polio. So set in 1940s, she gets sent to live with her aunt in New York City, where she discovers this whole other world. Her aunt owns a sort of crumbling theater in Midtown New York City in the 40s. And she meets a whole cast of people, from showgirls to writers. You have sort of a pre and post, you know, World War look at New York City during that time period. And she learns sort of this lesson of, you know, she doesn't necessarily have to be a good girl to be a good person. But she goes on this sort of youthful spree, you know, has this indiscretion that sort of shames her, and then she has to recover from it and go on to live her life. And, you know,
a poignant story of redemption.
Exactly. Dun, 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 a great coming of age story with a lot of great historical details and descriptions of clothes. And,
yeah. Well, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert, she knows how to tell a tale.
She does know how to tell a tale, and she does a great job in this one. Yeah. And it's, you know, it does have all those like sort of glamorous elements, but a little seriousness and a little historical detail. Perfect for your summer reading.
Good. Here's one that's on my list. By our own Laura Lippman, who's from Baltimore, of course.
Yes.
It's called Lady in the Lake. That's her latest. What's that one about?
Yes. So I was thrilled because I got this as an advanced reader copy. It has not been released yet. It's released in July, so you have to sign up, you know, pre-order it, whatever you need to do. But so this is set in Baltimore, of course. That's one of the things I love about Laura Lippman is the Baltimore connection. And it brings together a lot of the elements that I love about Laura Lippman's writing. So it's a mystery. You have a body that is recovered from a fountain. Cleo, she was, you know, murdered and left in this fountain under mysterious circumstances. Her body is recovered. But the story is told primarily from Maddie, who is this sort of middle-aged suburban housewife. She's 37. She finds herself with her son her senior year of high school. She has a dinner party and a visitor from her past that makes her realize she doesn't want to be married to her husband anymore. She always wanted to be a journalist. She wants to go off and find this. Again, this is in the 60s, so it's historical. So she goes off to really kind of unheard of at the time. You know, she leaves her husband and her sort of solid middle-class Jewish family and gets an apartment on her own, starts working in a newsroom. She, you know, has this little mystery she sort of solves, and that sort of propels her into this bigger mystery story of Cleo. And it's told in alternating voices from different characters, including the ghost of Cleo and Maddie herself. Mm-hmm. But other
I love
people
that device.
I
mean, like Barbara Kingsolver's novel, The Poisonwood Bible, is done. Like every chapter comes from a different character, and you hear the story unwind from these different perspectives. I think it's a great device.
It is a great device.
And Laura's a terrific writer.
She is. And this brings together, I have to say, this is, so I'm going to be honest that I'm only halfway through the advanced reader copy, but so far, this has to be one of my favorite books of hers, because it brings together all of those elements that you kind of love, that detective story, those Baltimore characters. There's a Baltimore Oriole in there. There's first African-American policewoman. And some of them, you know, are based on real story. The newsroom elements in there.
She knows the newsroom
because
she was with
the
Sun
newsroom
for a long time.
Right.
Sure.
So it brings together all the things that I've always loved about her writing, even before I lived in Baltimore, and sort of puts them in this one great book, an excellent follow-up to her last book from last summer, Sunburn. It is going to be a great read, and, you know, it has all of it. Mystery, yeah. Baltimore.
Lady in the Lake, Laura Lippman. It's coming out next month. But the other one I would add to that list is a book by Rob Hiasen, who's a wonderful guy, was with the Sun, a colleague of Laura's for a long time, and then was in the Capitol Gazette building, unfortunately, on the day that the terrible murders happened there. So Rob perished in the murder at the Capitol Gazette last June 28th. But he had written a novel that has now been published posthumously. His wife, Maria, is actually going to be here with us on midday to talk about it. It's called Float Plan. I just read it last weekend, and it's really, really charming. It's terrific.
That's
it's great. A great story. It's got some great trenchant observations. It's, again, sort of a coming-of-age story about a 30-year-old math teacher who sort of loses his way and then finds his way back. And it's just poignant and touching because Rob was a friend of myself and my wife, Linnell, who was a colleague of his at the Sun. But Float Plan, it's published by Apprentice House Press, which is over at Loyola University here in Baltimore. So, again, both of those are really good summer reads. Let's talk about a graphic novel. One of the things you got going on at the Pratt this summer, on the 29th of June at the Southeast Anchor Library, there's something called PrattCon, which is kind of like Comic-Con, but it's for
at
libraries. How does that happen?
So it is basically like a small Comic-Con. I think this is our fifth year running. So some of our staff, who, of course, are all well-read and excited about their favorite genres, who are very big comic fans, decided to get together and form PrattCon, so kind of like a Comic-Con. And it's free and open to the public, and it celebrates all things comic and graphic novel.
And the graphic novel you want to talk about for this summer is called Hot Comb by Ebony Flower.
Yeah, so this is the adult graphic novel. So it is an excellent look at several different women's and girls' stories, coming of age stories, told around hair salons or getting their hair done for African American women. So this is very focused on that experience of hair and learning to love your hair, learning, you know, the conversations that take place between women while getting their hair done. The artwork is really great and brings just an excellent addition to the stories so that you can actually see the experience very, you know, viscerally. And really my recommendation for graphic novels for the summer, for adults.
Hot comb, yeah. Hot comb. You know, and hair in the African-American community is such a central fundament of culture. I know there have been some movies. I think Chris Rock did a movie about African-American hair. I know Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, the wonderful Nigerian writer, writes about hair in the very beginning, the opening scene of Americana, her wonderful novel.
And so this really celebrates all that and really what it means.
Yeah. Let's talk about some books for little kids.
Sure.
The Book Hog by Greg Pizzoli. I know that name, Greg Pizzoli. Is he a pretty established children's author? Why have I heard of him?
Yeah, he is a pretty established children's author. And The Book Hog is obviously a choice because the hog in question loves books. The little pig loves everything.
I can't
imagine
you'd be attracted to something like that.
No, definitely not. It's my favorite pig. Loves books. The problem is he can't read. So luckily a librarian invites this book-loving pig to story time and helps him start the literary journey. So it celebrates the relationship with, you know, librarians and children who love books, and there's nothing to not like about
this
book.
It's shocking that this is something that is appeal to you, Johnny. That's great. Heidi Daniel is my guest. She's the president and CEO and chief librarian of the Enoch Pratt Central Library, as well as all of the 22 branches hanging around Baltimore. They are reopening the big building in the big new building, Central Library, in September. 410-662-8780. That's our phone number, our email, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can ping us on the WYPR Facebook page as well. Let us know what you're reading these days. Heidi, there's another book for children that you recommend called Another. This is about a girl and her cat.
Yeah, so this book
won. I like it already.
Yeah, exactly. What's not, again, girls, cats, not what's
right,
not to like.
Exactly.
So this is both the Coretta Scott King Award winner and the Caldecott Award winner. And it's because the illustrations are just amazing. They jump off the page. They bring the story to life. They are colorful. They are dynamic. The little girl and her cat go into a journey into a world that is similar but not quite the same as ours. It's really a delightful read, beautiful treat to look at as well.
Yeah, and the Coretta King Award and the Caldecott, those are probably the two biggest, hugest, most important awards for children.
Definitely for children's stuff. Yeah. You've got the Newbery and the Caldecott, and then the Coretta Scott King Award.
Yeah. So that's great. Yeah. Some tween books you want to talk about. The Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen Wang.
So this is not a new release. You can get it in paperback. I just want to say that I included this because I was compiling this list at home, and I asked my daughter, Kate, what do you recommend? What are you reading right now? And she
said, how old is she?
So Kate is 9, but I'm going to add that she's a very precocious reader, and we tend to read things together. So, you know, you have to judge for your own child what is appropriate. Kate wants to be an artist, so she pretty much only reads graphic novels because that's what she wants to do, is be an illustrator or an animator. And so she said The Prince and the Dressmaker, and this is her favorite book. It's by Jen Wang, and it's one we had read together previously. And she said, I've read it 6 times since we read it together. So obviously a perennial favorite. She loves the costumes in it. So this is about a prince who his parents really want him to settle down and find a princess and get married, but he does not want this. And his best friend is a dressmaker, and she helps him by designing all of his dresses that he wears in the evening when he becomes Lady Crystal, and he goes out into the city and has this whole other persona. And it really celebrates his individuality and the relationship with his best friend, this dressmaker, who struggles because he has to keep his identity a secret, she has to stay a secret with all of her amazing talents as dressmaking. So it sort of explores that relationship as well as, you know, the expectations from his parents and society and like
that's
him becoming who he is.
Complicated. That's
complicated
good.
And
like that.
Lovely illustrations by Jen Wang.
Let's talk about some nonfiction books. I read a whole bunch of those for this job. And,
yeah.
and I read some good ones. I just had a conversation yesterday with Adam Gopnik. He wrote a book called 1,000 Small Sanities about the history of liberalism. And I recommend it highly, as I told everybody yesterday. I read another one that I talked to the author about, a guy named Will Davies from London. He's a political economist, a book called Nervous States, another great political theory kind of book, but written in a very accessible and interesting way. And both of these books strike me as having incredible originality. I mean, the ideas that they're adducing in these things are things that I just had not encountered before. So I love that.
On my list now.
Yeah, they're good ones. I'm happy about them. So what strikes you as the big things to pay attention for in the nonfiction world?
So there's a few things coming out in the nonfiction world that I think is pretty exciting. I'll start with another local Baltimore author, D. Watkins, and his new book, We Speak for Ourselves, A Word from Forgotten Black America. And I felt like this was just such an engrossing, quick read. And his voice that he brought to the conversation about what it means to be black in America and what it means to be living in the city of Baltimore was really fresh and not really bogged down in a lot of the academic conversations we tend to put around the conversation of race in America. And so it's the idea of, folks on the street speaking for themselves and having that voice and having that voice be represented by them and not just by the sort of academic elite, right?
I agree. And Dee was on the show to talk about that book. He was actually on the show a couple of weeks ago to talk about some other stuff. But it is very enlightening to folks who don't hang out in the kind of neighborhoods that Dee grew up in.
Right.
You know, we hear about Baltimore. What does that mean? Is that the Harbor East? Is that, you know, Hamden? Is it Remington? Is it Guilford? No, there's a lot of Baltimore that we hear a lot of bad things about because there's some neighborhoods that are, you know, have a concentration of crime. Dee grew up on the East Side. He writes about where he grew up. He writes about the people he grew up with. And it's enlightening for folks who just don't have occasion to spend much time down there. So that's
great. And Baltimore being a city of neighborhoods can be great or can, you know, be a barrier for people to explore outside of their own realms. As someone who visits all 22 of our branches, you know, you get to see a lot of the city. So it's, I think it's an important book for those of us here, but really everywhere to read. We also have, Maid is on my list, which is a story of, you know, being a maid in the United States. Stephanie Land wrote the book herself, and it's her story of sort of her journey from having an unexpected pregnancy, being a single mom, and taking work as a maid. She, you know, was homeless, then, on public assistance. She becomes a maid. And sort of that dichotomy of her working to better her life and improve life for her child and the sort of upper middle class families that she's working for and how she's often invisible to them. And it really does a great job of showcasing the hard work of being poor in America. So just the number of forms you have to fill out to prove how poor you are can be, you know, overwhelming, how hard it can be to get to a job. So it's really enlightening. But she also does a great job of sort of talking about the families in a way that's both entertaining and compassionate that she works for. And so another quick read, good nonfiction for the summer, sort of thought-provoking, but, you'll get through it pretty quickly.
All right, Stephanie Land, the book is called Maid, that's M-A-I-D, Hard Work, Low Pay, and a Mother's Will to Survive. Here's one by Karen Rinaldi. It's great to suck at something, the unexpected joy of wiping out and what it can teach us about patience, resilience, and the stuff that really matters.
Yeah, so I picked this book because I feel like the message of the book is really about being willing to do something that you're not good at or that you're not going to be competitive. Karen Rinaldi surfs. And so a lot of this book focuses on her journey as a surfer. But she tells you she's not a good surfer. She's bad at it. But she keeps doing it and has continued to do it. And because it's important to do things we love and enjoy and don't have to be good at and don't have to be competitive in. So you can do something that you suck at and still love. And the book really resonated with me because I had last year had decided that I was going to start doing things that I wasn't naturally good at, like running. And
you've run a bunch of races.
Yeah, and then I started running races. And, you know, I'm not going to set any records, but I really enjoy it and love it. And it's worth doing. So it's that journey. And, you know, some people, I think, just to be prepared, to use the word suck a lot. But it's fun. And it really does make you think, what can I do in my life to be passionate without it being professional?
Yeah, that sounds like fun. You mentioned when we were talking about tween books a minute ago, this book, The Prince and the Dressmaker by Jen Wang. There's another one called In Real Life by Cory Doctorow and Jen Wang. Cory Doctorow was on the show a couple of years ago. He's the editor of a thing called Boing Boing.
Yeah, right. So I included this because I already had a Jen Wang book in there. It's on my daughter's list to read in the future, but it focuses on girl gamers. And I think that that's sort of a unique take, because oftentimes when we talk about gamers or video games, people think about boys. And it's been a heavily male-dominated sort of industry. And so this book focuses on a girl who starts gaming through a girl gamer group. And then she meets someone in the game who is making money through a practice called farming, which is where you sort of it's a video game speak for like killing someone, taking all their weapons, and then reselling them. So and then she learns that this person has some real life poverty. And so there's like a little bit of a social message here, but it also is just unique and refreshing to have a whole book focused on girl gamers. And again, Jen Wang's artwork, you know, is great. And she's an excellent illustrator.
Yeah, girl gamers, because the tech industry and then the gaming industry in particular, they've had a lot of problems with all sorts of misogynistic stuff.
Yes.
So that's good to have a gaming book for girls. Mm-hmm. Our producer, Rob Sivek, talks about some sci-fi reads that he likes. N.K. Jemisin, a book called Broken Earth, or it's a series called Broken Earth. And she's also got a new collection of short stories, as well as Kim Stanley Robinson's New York 2140. Are you a sci-fi reader? I'm not.
You know, I read fantasy more than sci-fi. I will occasionally read sci-fi. There's not a genre that I don't read sometimes. So, but I haven't heard of either of these, and they both sound interesting.
Yeah. Our director and engineer, Luke Spignall, tells me he never reads horror stories because he just has that every day at noon when he shows up to work. So he doesn't need to read the horror stories. That's what that's his take on it. Let's talk a little bit more about some other novels. We got a couple minutes left. How about one called The Bride Test by Helen Huang?
So Helen Huang, this is a follow-up to her first book, The Kiss Quotient. And what's most interesting to me about her novels is she brings a lot of different sort of intersectionality viewpoints to her writing. And so it's a romance, so it's kind of a light book. It's about, but she's also on the autism spectrum, and she brings that into her writing as well. So it's about a character named Kai who feels like he can't feel emotions correctly because he is on the autism spectrum, and his mother decides she's going to find a woman for him to fall in love with. So she goes back to Vietnam, and
as moms are wont to
right?
do. Yeah.
Exactly. The mom is not going to give up on him, and she wants him to get married and be happy. So she goes back to Vietnam, finds Esme and her daughter, brings them to the United States, and so Esme is supposed to make Kai fall in love with her, and of course Esme starts to have feelings on her own, and so it turns into a romantic escapade, as one would expect. So,
and that's a good beach read, too.
It's a
right
good
there.
Beach read, too, with a little bit of a different, you know, twist.
Yeah. So. Real quick, we got like 30 seconds left, but Ruth Reichel, the famous food writer, has one called Save Me the Plums, My Gourmet Memoir. I bet that one's a good one.
So this is really decadent and lovely. And if you like to eat and read, this is a great book for you. It really follows her time as the editor of Gourmet, which is this sort of amazing, pivotal, food book that really helped launch the food scene into what it is today. It talks about her time as a food critic, sort of her experience at Condé Nast, which just seems to me to be like incredibly luxurious and sort of, you know, again, like really decadent. So an excellent memoir for the summer.
All right. Excellent suggestions. I really appreciate it. And have fun the rest of the summer with your summer reading. And we'll see you in September at the grand reopening.
Great. Thanks.
Heidi Daniel. She is the president and CEO of Baltimore's Enoch Pratt Free Library. By the way, speaking of reading, this programming note: on the fourth Friday of every month, during All Things Considered, I host a little segment called What Are You Reading? And my guest this month on June 28th will be the former mayor of Baltimore, Kurt Schmoke. Heidi Daniels been a guest on that little segment, but Kurt Schmoke's going to tell us about a couple of his favorite books. I hope you can join us then. Coming up after a short break, J. Wynn Russick joins us with her weekly theater review. It's a rock opera. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR.